A gentleman making $84 million per year didn't consider himself a success because his neighbour was making $840.
I was constantly seeking validation from people. My way of making myself feel good was just working harder. And I tied a lot of my self-worth into achieving and being the best and feeling like, am I good enough? I think a lot of people, the reason why we want all this external success is to fill a hole, because deep down, we don't feel we're actually enough.
You're touching on one of the two reasons where fear comes from, that you won't be loved and that you're not enough. And we are more than enough, but the perspectives often don't show that when a neighbor makes 10 times the amount of money, for instance, than you do. 47% of the time, that's the Harvard study, people are thinking about something other than what they're doing. Being in another place to where their body is. This wishing time away is nuts. Meditate to become a better meditator. You meditate to become a better person.
Thomas, thank you so much for coming on the Career Confidence Podcast today. When I saw you on LinkedIn and I viewed your profile, I thought I have to have you on to talk about all the incredible things we're going to speak about, but in particular, meditation, why it's so important, how it's changed your life, how it's changed my life, and how it can change the lives of those that choose to go on this path and explore this journey. But before we go into meditation and all the benefits and stress and everything that's going on in our society right now, can you give a little bit of an introduction into who you are and also what got you interested and inspired to go on your own meditation journey? So, Thomas, over to you.
Thank you, Georgie. What an introduction. I'm Thomas. For the last 10 years, I've been running a company called Mr. Meditate. As a teenager, wanted to be happy in this life. I realized that's what I want in this life, to be happy. And then I met several multimillionaires as a late teen, in my early 20s, just a little while ago, who were miserable. They had all the possessions, the mansions, the bling, the Aston Martins, the tennis courts back then. And yet, I'm thinking they have everything that I would need to be happy. I have all these possessions, and yet they were not. And after several of those, I realized, it can't be money, because they've got all this money in the world. So I went exploring, and I went along to my first meditation session. I'll go a bit deeper into that as we go. But that really started the path. Oh, there's something else. I can look into my inner world. And being in sales roles similar to you, Georgie, I started meditating for about 10 years, and I was keeping a lot more balanced amidst the ups and downs, the sales targets, you know, zero every month. You got to hit 100% or more just to kind of keep your position often. And I noticed so many people really suffering, you know, when they hit over 100%, high fives, drinks on me. But when they didn't, they really struggled. Integrity went through the floor, and just to really do anything they can, desperation to make sales. So I was observing that in many different industries, and the last was legal. And when the lawyers became the most depressed in 2012, overtaking the dentist, I was just in shock. Dentists held top spot for 15 years, lawyers now 11 years running as most depressed. And having been in business development for about 100 law firms, I would ask my network, you know, is depression a problem in your firm? Yes, it is. Okay, what are you doing about it? Oh, well, we have gym memberships and EAP. And it's like, okay, what's the uptake? Oh, less than 5%. Aha, so what else are you doing? And there was nothing else. So the epiphany came, lawyers are depressed. Why are they depressed? I'm not depressed. I meditate. Why don't I teach them how to meditate? And the idea was launched. 10 years on, we sit and chat.
Okay, there's going to be a lot of things to talk about here, but the first thing that I want to pull out is what you said, because it's so powerful, because we are sold this narrative in our society that we need to earn a certain income, drive a certain car, earn a certain house, and then will be happy. And like you, Thomas, I've also met and had the privilege of meeting a lot of successful people who are, well, successful in quotes, right? Because success on the outside, but inside, they are anxious, depressed, and deeply miserable. And they, and it's always fascinated me. And I think I'm really grateful that I've learned this from a young age, because I think too many people, and myself used to be including this, chase that external success and that validation and say, I'll be happy when. And it makes, and it used to make me incredibly unhappy, extremely anxious, and almost, I'd say, some days a little bit depressed as well, because I was like, you know, why doesn't my life have any meaning? Why aren't I happy? And why aren't I feeling fulfilled? Why do you think that we, as a society, put so much weight onto these material possessions? And what can we do to start unraveling our sense of worth out of that sort of external validation and start the journey from within, where I believe true happiness lies?
So let me answer that with the two types of happiness, at least that I'm aware of. And the first is the hedonism. It's the hedonistic type of happiness, is what can I get from this world? What possessions, what mansions can I buy, what clothes, whatever it is, what can I get from this world? And the more you get, the happier you'll be. So it does make you happy when you get all these possessions. If I was to give you $1 million right now, I think maybe we'll get a little cheeky smile from you, right? But the problem with that type of happiness is it does not last. And there's always more. There's always more. Now, the other type of happiness is called eudaimonia. It's one of my favorite words because it has all the vowels in it, E-U-D-A-I-M-O-N-I-A, eudaimonia. And this type of happiness is what can you contribute to the world? And it's like, imagine a volunteer. They offer so much of their time, their skills, or their volition to help others. And often these volunteers get more than what they actually do for others. And it is a lasting type of happiness. So I think people are chasing hedonism because it's a nice thing they can show off. And I think we've all been guilty of it. And it does make us happy, certainly. But it's like a bottomless well with that. The second thing is that I think in general, still as people, spend most of our waking hour attention focused externally. So from the moment you wake up, you know, you switch off your phone, and we'll go into that a little bit, maybe some sleep issues that are happening out there as well. And so we're just focused externally, and we often forget about the internal until, in most cases, there is an issue. Can't sleep, you're stressed, you're anxious, you're out of balance and out of whack. So, and that's my sort of answer on those two fronts as such.
No, 100%. We also, we often wait for crisis until we change something, right? And it's like, it's the diagnosis, it's the lack of sleep, it's the stress, it's the all of the things that go wrong in our lives. But it's not until we see something that I think we actually do something about it. But what I'd really like to go into now is that obviously you've spoken about that internal world, and meditation definitely is a practice that can help, you know, go within and really understand yourself at a deeper level. But can you share a little bit about your journey into how you discovered meditation? Because one thing that I often get as a bit of, I guess, a pushback is, oh, I'm too busy to meditate, Georgie, or I can't sit and meditate, or my mind's too busy. I'm like, that's the reason to meditate. So can you share how you integrated meditation into your own life and the journey you've gone on, building that into your life as a practice?
My first comment is, the busier you are, the more you need this. It's like a maintenance tool, a preventative tool, and it helps to improve mental health. So I heard an ad, for those of my vintage who would remember Double TFM in the year 2000, there was an ad of some meditation guy on a commercial radio station coming to a place called Dulles Brooks Hall, which is now apartments, to run a meditation session. It piqued my interest. I went along with my mother, and it was a guy, an Australian guy, who had been meditating in a cave in India for 10 years. So wow. Really kind of extreme, coming to a city of, it's pretty commercial. And it piqued my interest, had this interesting Indian ancient instrument, one of those sort of, I actually should find out what its name, where you puff it and works in a similar fashion to a bagpipe. and just piqued my interest. And what he talked about really got me curious. So I signed up to a one-day course. I went along for an eight-hour session. In that, we did four 20-minute sessions of four different techniques throughout, you know, amongst all the explanation throughout the day. The final one was a chanting exercise, and I don't teach chanting these days, but I did try it because there was 300 other people in the room, and I felt, well, of course I'm going to do it just to give something a go. And after that 20 minutes, there was like a pause. He said, just keep your eyes closed and just feel all the different vibrations going through the room. It's really powerful. So I bought a cassette tape and chanted all the way home. My partner at the time said, what the hell has happened to you? So it was rather like a bit of a radical act all of a sudden. But this teacher went back to India, and so I started searching others. And over the next 2 years, I came across about 20 or more techniques. And I really enjoyed the techniques, but I didn't like the rites or the rituals associated. Like put a dot on your head and you'll be holy, or shave your head, or wear white for purity, and or whatever it was. And I loved the techniques, but I did not want to participate in those rites and rituals. And, you know, I'm all about it. If that's what you like and what you want to do, wish to do, by all means. But I felt that it wasn't a necessary component. And then serendipitously, I stumbled upon a 10-day silent retreat called Vipassana. And that was the transformation. Leading up to it, the girlfriend at the time, right outside the retreat, said that she'll sleep with somebody else if I go to this retreat. Oh, and I looked at her, well, I guess if you do, we're done. If you don't, I guess we're still together. But I'm going on this retreat. I've just taken 10 days off. Being a silent retreat, my mind started chatting. There's no new information. We're meditating 10 hours a day, every day, something completely foreign and different for me. And when not much new information comes in, stuff starts coming up to the surface. Is she not? By day seven, I was ready to murder this guy. What guy? It was all in my imagination. Couldn't sleep. If you took a photo of me at the retreat, it would be a wonderful Instagram picture. What a great meditator. Look at the posture. But inside was a complete storm, was a complete circus. And couldn't sleep, ready to run away to solve those issues. But I ended up just staying on the advice of the teacher. Look, just work through it, just observe it. And then all of a sudden, this wave of calm just, it was like, came upon me. And I can't explain it rationally, but this compassion started beaming out of my heart. Because why would a person that close to me, or anyone really, want to hurt another person? I'm going to help this person. So that was my radical, like absolutely radical transformation from reacting to information or circumstances to responding how I choose to respond, which it is that choice at every moment in time. Much easier said than done, but it's a work in progress.
Yeah. Wow, that's just, I just had to pause there and to say how powerful that is. And it's really interesting how you went on that silent retreat without the external stimulation coming in, and what came to the surface, and what was, and probably things that you didn't even realize that were still, you're still working through, or memories or things like, because one thing that I've sort of noticed through my sort of meditation sometimes is the constant like overcoming process of, oh, that's still there. That's interesting. I still need to work through that. Or, oh, that person, that what they did to me 10 years ago. Oh, okay. Maybe I've got to work on a bit of forgiveness. But it's that constant overcoming process. And I think, especially at the beginning of someone's journey, that can be very, very hard because, you know, all we like, isn't it that study that people would rather give themselves an electric shock than sit with themselves for 15 minutes? That just absolutely blows my mind. But can you just talk a little bit more about though that 10-day silent retreat and when those thoughts were coming up and those visions and the worst case scenario, how did you like just come back to calm, or did you allow yourself to go there? Because I think this is what happens in our day-to-day life, is these thoughts pop up, we then feel the emotions, we get all angry and frustrated, and then we sort of are in that sort of stress spiral. So when those negative thoughts come up, what can we do to kind of calm ourselves back down and sort of, yeah, keep on, I guess, trying to come back to some sort of peace?
Mm. The I guess part of this retreat, and really generally the practice, it's a practice of purification. And often when there's stuff that's unpleasant, you wish to avoid it. And it, for, you know, all of us, I think to some degree, we have stuff bubbling under the surface, right? And we're so busy on the surface level that we don't really ever attend to it. So sitting in silence for 10 days is a wonderful opportunity to allow that stuff to come up. And it's not pleasant. It can be, but it often is not. And you wish to avoid it. And now the more you avoid it, and this is one of the two things that makes people miserable, including myself and anybody else. If you avoid things like thoughts or circumstances that you know you need to attend to, or if you have cravings for things. So if you avoid the negatives, I don't want that. I don't want that unpleasant conversation. Just give me the 100% targets, or just give me the good stuff. And there is like a non-acceptance of your reality as it is. And for me, the big shift was that the logistics to get home from that retreat would have taken me 4 hours. And I'm already thinking, by the time that 4 hours comes, I would, you know, everything would settle by that point. And, is it really worth it? So I was able to just sit and observe my thoughts like a fly on the wall and watch it rather than interact in it, be swept up in that deluge, in that whirlwind. I was able to sort of hover above it. And it was fascinating. And I accepted that the thoughts were there. And then I was able to move on, you know, from those. So it comes to the surface. It can be pleasant, can be unpleasant, but you just observe your reality as it is, not the way you want it to be or don't want it to be, but as it is. So that's a really powerful lesson that I experienced about misery.
Yeah, it's and I think as well, what I learned when I sort of noticed when I started becoming more conscious throughout meditating more is there was a period where more things surfaced that I didn't particularly like. And it would have been easy in those scenarios, I guess, just to put the TV on or check social media and try and not have those thoughts. But I think what I've learned is really important to do is actually sit in it and feel the discomfort and try and work through it. And of course, like, you know, some, if it's really traumatic therapy, of course, please go and get some professional help. But it was just a few things that happened in my childhood, just some like moments that came up where I felt a little bit, you know, when I was potentially being bullied in school, and how that then sort of had filtered its way into my working life, and how I was constantly seeking validation from people, or, you know, my way of just making myself feel good was just working harder. And I tied a lot of my self of worth into achieving and being the best, and, you know, feeling like, am I good enough? And I think that's actually a really important piece to stay with, Thomas. I'd love your opinion on it, because I think a lot of people, the reason why we want all this external success is to fill a hole, because deep down we don't feel we're actually enough. And I think that is a really big problem in our society, is that we don't feel whole as humans. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you're touching on one of the two reasons where fear comes from, that you won't be loved and that you're not enough. And we are more than enough, but the perspectives often don't show that when a neighbor makes 10 times the amount of money, for instance, than you do. And I used to ask people about their, what are the characteristics that have made them the success they are today? And a gentleman making $84 million per year didn't consider himself a success, because his neighbor was making $840 million. And I suggested to him that, according to the majority of the population, you are a success, but he never perceived it. And on the opposite extreme, somebody who gets to wake up, stretch his arms, I feel successful because I can experience another day. I get to experience another day. So I live a bit of a middle path in between that, but I have to remind that we are so lucky. We've won the lottery already just by being born humans. Yet this fast mind takes us away from, you know, this beautiful experience that we are having. So, give me a part two to that question, George.
Well, I think the part two is what I've learned is to find gratitude in the day to day. I think gratitude for me has been an extremely important practice, and also really untangling this need to always be achieving and doing and actually find joy in just the being. And I would say I'm somebody that is very, have always been very goal orientated. And I used to have a habit of saying, when I have this, I'll be happy, or when I have this, I'll feel this way. And what I've come to realize is that, again, like we sort of said at the start, no amount of material or career success will ever take away the feeling of emptiness if I don't identify where that comes from. And I've done a lot of work on that. And what I think meditation enables people to do is just pause and become more familiar with themselves and their triggers and their thoughts and their emotions. And once you're aware of something, you have the power to change something. And that we're in 2024 now, when people are setting goals, they want to get fitter, they want to achieve things in their business, in their lives, in their career. And then halfway through the year, they go, oh, nothing's changed. But we can't expect our external world to change until we change. So can you talk now, like people listening to this, that, okay, they go, right, okay, I want to, you know, experience more peace and more joy and more fulfillment in my day-to-day life. How can meditation help this? And where should I begin?
Wonderful. So first of all, you begin with, you want to do it. Yeah, that's the key. You've got to want to do it. Now, this is beyond motivation. These days I say stuff motivation, because motivation waxes and wanes. I've facilitated to over 70,000 participants. So I've seen some patterns over the last decade. And I say stuff motivation because I've been clapped off stage. Oh, that was wonderful. I feel great. I'm really going to do this. And I'm excited. Someone tells me they're going to do it. Wonderful. I feel like my work is even more fulfilling by getting somebody on this path, obviously, if they want to do it. But then I walk in the corridor and I'm getting people, it's like they're starting to avoid me because they haven't been doing it. There's that meditation guy. Oh, no, I said I was going to do it. I haven't been doing it. And, oh, right. So they'll run out. And so not working with motivation, because, yes, at the beginning you'll be all motivated. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then a couple of months later it becomes a distant memory, because one day you had a maybe hangover or you just couldn't be bothered and the next day didn't come. So we really work with identifying your why. Now, your intention, your volition for wanting to do this practice. What are you looking for? If it's to improve your sleep quality, you've heard somewhere along the lines that meditation could help. That's a wonderful reason. If you're stressed out, you want to reduce stress. If you're anxious, if you're depressed, whatever the symptoms are. Now, these are usually 80% of the time they're negative. People are drawn to this practice when there's an issue, when there's a crisis, or when they can't sleep, whatever it is. But then there's the 20% who everything's going pretty well and they're just looking for ways to take it to the next level, right? So my first tip is to start, start small, but start. And taking one step in that direction is progress. And a 1% improvement shows progress, and your progress is more important than perfection. And you keep taking these little 1% steps, and before you know it, the changes start to become obvious. Now, often as you go, I think a pretty common thing. I'm not sure if this happened to you, Georgie, that you're wondering, oh, is this working? Am I doing it right? At the beginning, oh, I'm just sitting here. Is this what it's supposed to be doing? So having a guide, somebody to help get you on the initial course with your training wheels, whether you use an app, whether you go to sessions in group sessions, whatever it is, whatever your style of learning is, some training wheels are pretty good at the beginning. And Headspace, the app, is a wonderful, you know, training wheels for so many millions of people. But then over time, to lose those training wheels so that you are not needing any equipment, not needing any apps or any tools, so that you can meditate whenever you need to or want to. So there are many intro courses, and I say this as a guide because the second thing is you need to design it to suit you, right? There are hundreds of teachers, if not thousands, millions of teachers out there. everyone's got a slightly different angle because they've had their own teachings. But take whatever you want from whatever teacher. It could just be one, but then design it to suit you. That's a wonderful, very important factor that you don't have to stringently follow this path if you're really resisting it. Number three, regularity. The continuity of practice is the secret to success. And the success in this instance is your intention. So if you've thrown in a couple of drops into the jar of improving sleep, fantastic, keep going. And they're essentially three key tips about the overarching kind of way to approach it. Now, the way I go about it is in three stages. First stage is learning to master your mind. This loud, chatty, busy, crazy, wild mind. I mean, I'm speaking on my own behalf, of course, but no doubt it is experience out there. So learning how to master it, and that is through the form of concentration. So like attention training, focus on your breath, focus on an object, focus on whatever it is. And what will happen is you start to focus because everyone can focus on something, but keeping your attention on it, this concentration, that's where the challenge is, especially in this day and age when you have those little devices that have a wonderful way of getting your attention dozens, if not hundreds of times a day. So we are all told to concentrate at school, but we're never taught to concentrate. So even at work, concentrate. Not teaching me how. How am I supposed to know this? So it's like a learned through experience skill, and it's not done very well. So stage one is concentration, right? You need to be able to keep your attention on something. So we train that so that it makes these 1% improvements. Because without concentration, the awareness or the mindfulness is sporadic. Right. So yes, everyone is aware at some point in time and noticing things, but then often lost in thought, ruminating about what's happened, the past, or projecting into the future about what's going to happen, what's the boss going to say, or what's, how am I going to pay my mortgage this month, whatever the circumstance. Right. So stage one, the concentration, stage two, the awareness, and stage three is the wisdom. And wisdom comes from awareness. Without awareness, the wisdom cannot be developed. And this is separate to IQ. There are many, many brilliant minds out there, such high IQs. And let's take the example of people who build an atomic bomb, right? You have to be pretty damn smart to build an atomic bomb. However, it's not very wise to do so. Now, this wisdom comes from in the form of equanimity. Equanimity is essentially having a mental equilibrium amidst the ups and downs that we've had all of our lives up until this point, and we're going to have for the remainder of our lives. I suspect you have ups and downs as well, Georgie, just one or two. Mm-hmm. So the measure of your yardstick, or the yardstick of your progress in meditation, the measure of your progress is your equanimity in day-to-day life, especially when difficult situations arise and when crisis hits. How balanced you can remain in those circumstances really changes your experience. It determines your experience. It's a form of attitude. And then the final part to that, and something that you touched on, is the attitude of gratitude. And initially when I started practicing gratitude, I thought, oh, this is a bit hippie, a bit fluffy, and peace, love, and happiness, and so forth. But what I started realizing way back was that gratitude is a very present-minded thinking process. It offers you perspective on how good you've got it. I've got 10 fingers. Wow, I can do whatever I want with these fingers. How lucky am I? Some people don't, right? So, and this gratitude also, the science is catching up to all of this stuff, which I'm delighted about, but I've known this stuff through experience, as do many, experienced meditators. When they hear the university study and findings, wow, it's so compelling, but they already know this. Now, the gratitude, the recent finding that I've come across is that gratitude increases your happiness levels by up to 25%. And that is because it's present-minded, and happiness only occurs in the present. Like love, peace, freedom, truth all happen in the present. So this process helps to get you into the present, into the here, when the mind wanders into the past, into the future, the history, the mystery, and you train the mind to be more present, you fall awake to the life as it presents itself to you, moment by moment, moment by moment. Now, this want for achievement, this cravings for possessions and so forth, and to look good on the outside, is really not worth it if the inside isn't looked after. So in this process, and there's many formal and informal techniques that you can practice, I recommend, especially at the early stages, to have a formal practice where you sit upright in a chair, not lying down, because the tendency is to fall asleep. And I facilitate in corporate workplaces. Early on, I tried, somebody wanted to lie down, yes, and they started snoring. So yet another distraction in the room. And the reason for that is because when your body is still, and I say this because a lot of people say, oh, running is my meditation, swimming is my meditation, some active thing. And it is definitely a form of mindfulness and being aware, because you have to be. When you run, you have to be focused on your body. When you swim, you have to be aware, because otherwise you would drink water or fall over. However, you're still moving and there's a lot of exertion, so the brain is still being quite active. When you are still, it's like when the body is still, it's like it's a sign, a body language to your mind telling it to calm down and be still. Because let's face it, this unruly mind really does need to be tamed, to be settled down.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy. That's just so powerful. And as you were speaking there, I was reflecting on how, I guess, my journey began. And it began, oh God, over 5 years ago now. And I started with Headspace as well. And that was a really good starting point for me, the guided meditations, the, you know, just sort of being told sort of how to sort of guide my mind through it. And now I do sort of just sort of put down background music on, or sometimes if my mind is feeling a little busy, I'll, you know, sit down and just sort of do like a breathing exercise and just sort of follow my breath. But the thing that for me that I've realized, and it's, I think that's the thing about meditation, but like anything in life, if we don't see that instant gratification, that's when people go, oh, it's not working for me. I can't be bothered to do it anymore. And I'm sure you would say the same, Thomas, stick with it. Because what I sort of smile at is that, you know, this year, and this has been a really tough year for a lot of people, you know, like you just mentioned there, rising mortgage rates, you know, there's been a lot more layoffs and things. And, you know, I think going into sort of like now we're in 2024, it's not going to get any easier, right? But one thing I've realized is that this is kind of what I've trained for. Because in these moments where life has got particularly more challenging, I have a different approach and I'm actually able to remove myself from the situation, see the bigger picture and stay very calm. But before, I would be so much more reactive, like, we need to do this, we need to do that. Oh my God, like panic stations, worst case scenario, future casting. It's got, you know, I'm going to be broke on the street and homeless, like literally going, you know, my mind would just go a million miles an hour. And what I think meditation's enabled me to do, and having this practice over the last 5 years, is in these moments where challenges come up, I'm very more capable of dealing with them in a calmer, more present manner, and always coming back to perspective and gratitude to be like, well, okay, it could be worse, you know, or like you say, I've got 10 fingers and I can move my body every day and I have got a roof over my home and all of these things. But one thing that I remember Tony Robbins saying in a podcast I listened to ages ago when I was just starting my meditation journey is, success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. And that quote has stuck with me for so long, because what I've come to realize is that I could have all the success in the world, but if I'm not happy and not looking after my mind every single day, what does it all mean? What's it all for? You know, when I don't want to be one of those people, like you've said, who've got all the house, all the things, but I'm miserable and unhappy. And that scares me. So I think what we're talking about today is so important, and you've got to stick with it, because you won't notice necessarily much change potentially straight away or day to day, but there'll be a situation that you go through and you go, oh God, 5 years ago, I'd have reacted totally different to this. And now here I am dealing with this in quite a calm way.
So. And more of those situations will arise as you go. Yeah. And I used to, prior to meditating, I used to tailgate people on the freeway. If they were doing 99, I'd flash the lights, get yeah. out of the way. What are you doing? Get off the right lane. And I would roll up, like turn up to university exhausted before the classes would even start because I was a crazy P-plate driver. Now, this process, and when I facilitate, I don't use the word meditation these days, or mindfulness. I never really use the word mindfulness. I use attention and attitude training, right? So the attention bit is twofold. So the concentrating, that's your closed, focused attention. And then you've got your open attention, your awareness. And the attitude, equanimity and gratitude. Now, this process often has some immediate effects for people who are so not used to it. Ah, wow. And often that effect is falling asleep during the practice. Right. And I call that a process meditation dancing, because when you, especially during the course of a busy day, you sit down and for, let's say, for 5 or 10 minutes to do that, what happens is the adrenaline wears off of the rushing around. I've got to get all that stuff done and calls and all that. And you actually get to the state that you are really in. And it can take less than 10 minutes to do that. And that state that they're really in is actually exhausted, but they're running on coffee, they're running on, you know, getting stuff done. And so this, that's one thing, gets you to the state that you're actually in. And if that's you, if you keep dancing and so forth and really check in with your sleep hygiene, there's some adjustment that most likely needs to be made if you're that exhausted. Now, the other thing is in this process, you're honoring yourself with this gift, a chance to simply be a human being for once, not always a human doing. And, you know, this happens throughout everyone's life, right? You get up, you're, oh, yeah, I've got to achieve, got to get that done, and I'm all about it. Go for it. You know, achieve your goals, smash your targets. You know, it's there for the taking. But keep yourself balanced as you go throughout. So it's a chance to be a human being, not always a human doing. It's an opportunity to observe what's going on for you versus acting all day long and getting stuff done all day long. But thirdly, it's a chance to tune into your own inner world, because let's face it, that's where life is lived from. All your thoughts, your feelings, emotions, your happiness levels all happen from the inside out versus most of our waking hour attention being focused externally. So it gives you a little pause and an opportunity to become a lot more aware of what's going on. And when you're aware, then you can change direction, course correct. You can intercept as you're going in this direction. And it's a form of pre-resilience, right? So resilience is all about, you know, recovering from adversity, getting back up when you've been knocked down. But if you don't get down, in the first instance, if you can intercept that and course correct, there's no need for resilience, right? And imagine living in that world where you don't have to wind down because you never wound up in the first place. Now, it sounds quite utopic, but it is a work in progress. 1% better every day, you'll be able to attend to that. And then like you, you'll reflect and go, oh, I'd normally, in the past, I'd react to that circumstance. And here you are, you've continue your trajectory of balance, you know, being able to focus on what's important. And focusing on what's important is all that's important. So that all of a sudden, these little menial, unimportant things that you've been doing, I don't know, that gets out of your schedule. And there becomes a shift out of busyness And people often ask me, oh, are you busy? And I respond, I say, I haven't been busy in 10 years. I'm done with busy. That busy never served me well. So, what are you talking about? Isn't business good? Business is better than ever, but I'm never busy. My days are full. And that little shift in the language there makes a tremendous difference, because the busyness is usually, business is usually external pressures, right? Oh, yeah, I'm busy. I've got to do this for that person, that person. When you fill up your days, you control what you fill it up with. And I start my day every day. It's a non-negotiable, unless there's an early flight, with some quiet time to prepare myself for the ups and downs ahead in my day, because they're coming every single day.
That they are. And I think that this is the thing, like people try and avoid the struggle. And I read a quote the other day, which has stuck with me as well. It's like struggle, we're always going to struggle, but pain is a choice, and you don't need to really suffer through it as well. Like, you know, you're going to go through ups and downs. That's life. Things are going to happen in your day, in your week, in your month, in your years. But we always can choose how we respond to that. And I think what meditation and mindfulness practice and just being aware of my attitudes and behaviors, like you said, has enabled me to do is be more thoughtful in the way that I do react to things, and very also as well, Thomas, intentional with the energy I bring in to my team. And I think that that's the key piece as well. Like a lot of people listening to the podcast, you know, they're going into the offices, they're dealing with their teams, they're dealing with their children, they're dealing with their family. And with as life gets busy and we're, you know, we're constantly under a lot of stress and pressure from external factors, I think it's just more than ever so important to have a practice where we can just sit with ourselves in silence, whether it's 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 20 minutes a day, and just be with ourselves in our thoughts and just check in. I really do honestly think it's so important to do it, because if we're not constantly checking in with ourselves, we're just going to constantly react to life and what happens and be so unconscious and then wake up one day and go, God, how did I end up here? I think that's part of the problem.
Well, it's very timely you say that, because often I encounter people who don't sleep well, and I'm like, oh, wow, what are you doing about it? Oh, you know, drinks or sleeping pills, and they work, but temporarily.
Yeah.
And you don't really get a good night's sleep. But then what's the long-term solution of that? And then when I was in the legal profession, I would be, you know, already meditating and so forth. I would say happy Monday to people. And they go, what do you mean happy Monday? I haven't even had my coffee. What are you doing talking to me? And I said, it's not Friday yet. What are you talking about? I said, does it need to be? I don't discriminate. Every day can be a happy day. So they'll be wishing their times away. Can't wait for my holidays. Ah, can't wait till Christmas. And then when Christmas comes, what's the most common thing said? Where did that year go? And so way back when you're thinking, can't wait till Christmas, you're projecting into the future. You get to Christmas and or along those lines, you were just lost in thought. 47% of the time, that's the Harvard study, people are thinking about something other than what they're doing. So being in another place to where their body is. So this wishing time away is nuts. It happens so often, you know, around Christmas. But it's an opportunity to you don't meditate to become a better meditator. You meditate to become a better person. So that you develop this friendly cooperation with yourself, right? To be able to sit through all the storms, the mental storms and stuff that comes up as you start to quieten the surface of the mind, takes some courage. You know, you're sitting there like a statue, let's say, but you've gone through a storm inside. And if you're able to weather that storm with the understanding of impermanence, this will also change. If you're able to sit with it, you'll move beyond it. And when you move beyond it, then there's this purification that starts to happen. And you can't help but, you know, you see the improvements in yourself. You have those aha moments happening more and more, because imagine your mind is a snow globe, or your brain. When that snow globe is agitated and shaken, all those snowflakes are like your thoughts, right? This thought that, oh yeah, I've better attend to that email. I'll get the phone call, and jumping around all day long. And even like a minute or 3 minutes or five helps to take that snow globe or those snowflakes to settle for not only for calmness and for clarity, but for spaciousness, for those new ideas, those aha moments to come in. And most people have those in the shower or on the toilet. And the reason for that is because that's when they come to their senses, right? You got a hot shower or maybe cold, I'm not sure of your preference, but you have that shower, you know, you feel it on your body and it gives your brain a break. You are coming to your senses. You have this sensory experience, allows a snow globe to settle and there's spaciousness. But you don't need to necessarily be in the shower or on the toilet. You can start to have this practice of having a settled mind and you'll see things differently. You could have walked past that same spot 1,000 times and never noticed because you're always lost in thought. But as you start to become more aware, more conscious about, you know, what's happening on a moment-by-moment experience, then you go, oh, never seen that before. And it enriches and enhances your experience of this life. But everyone needs to find this path themselves. And, you know, that's why the why needs to be really strong. And if your why is you can't sleep and you've repaired your sleep by giving these methods a proper trial, then there could be otherwise. Oh, I want to improve this area or whatever, that area. Now, you touched on something really, really key, the habit creation. Now, across so many teachers, meditation teachers and so forth, if we could all combine our thoughts and so forth, how to help people develop this habit of practice better, then we would. But everyone's got their own individual thing, their own distractions, their own busyness in life. But 10 minutes three times a week, that's the minimum effective dose according to Harvard, right? That's the first kind of threshold to aim for. And everybody that I speak to, I can fit in 10 minutes three times a week, no worries. But without the intention, that motivation falls off because something compelling on Netflix has come up. And it happens to go to the next episode automatically. Oh, brilliant, Netflix. Mm. So this continuity is key. And if 10 minutes is a bit of a stretch for you, you can do 1 minute. There's this 1 minute relaxation response. If you like, to make this a bit of a practical session, Georgie, I can share this one technique which talked about the breathing you alluded to at the beginning. And I'll start it off by saying we all do this already. I bet you do this already. When you come home after a big day at work, a busy day or full day at work, you jump on the couch and you do. Everybody does this, I suspect, right? I'm yet to encounter a person who doesn't do that. Now, that triggers the relaxation response, right? So long as the out-breath is longer than the in-breath, it'll trigger the relaxation response. Now, the in-breath is responsible for the stress response, right? And so if you have that, like imagine getting frightened, right? Instantly there's tension, your body contracts, the heart rate rises, the blood pressure increases just by breathing in a fast way on the in-breath. So the key is to take a deep breath in for a count of three. And like you alluded to before, not your chest, because if you breathe up and down from your chest, which most people do when they're anxious, what's my boss going to say? Oh, how am I going to achieve this or that? You are breeding anxiety. You are you're increasing your blood pressure, your heart rate. Your blood is turning acidic, simply breathing from your chest. So the key way to distinguish it is when you take a deep breath in, if your belly is going in, like the chest thoracic breathing, then that is called dysfunctional breathing. If your belly is going out when you take a breath in, and I had some donuts yesterday to demonstrate, that is called functional breathing. That'll help you stay more grounded, keep a lot more of your energy. So when we do this relaxation response technique, when we take a breath in, making sure that the belly goes out. So in for three so you can really feel like you've arrived in your body. Hold for two so you can just feel that you're there, and then out through the mouth for five. That sigh. And as you sigh, so keep going as I give some instructions. Mm-hmm. That sigh, allow the tension, the worries, the concerns, the stresses to just come off you. Like you were jumping on the couch. Right? Three mm-hmm. of those little breaths, and all of a sudden you've taken mm-hmm. the edginess off. Now, you can do this in a formal fashion. You can close your eyes. You can really sigh it loudly, or you can do it in a boardroom. But if you do it in a boardroom, please don't sigh very loud. I don't want the call from the CEO mm-hmm. telling me, hey, my staff are all relaxed and calm, but they're sighing all the time, mm. right? So that's where you design it to suit you. And three of those little breaths, just that edginess comes off and you're able to deal with that circumstance. Even if you don't like it, or especially if you don't like it, or if you have to work with a colleague who you don't like, you start to develop this friendly cooperation with yourself. And in turn, you may not like that person, but you'll have friendly cooperation because you have been tasked a project or you need to get some sort of, you know, activity done with them. So there's a little couple of tips intertwined. And the third little micro tip, which is super important, it took me a little while to really, train myself with this tip as well. And that is about how to stay grounded in the present. Now, we spoke earlier about the focused closed attention and the open awareness attention. And that open awareness attention we all have. So like you are familiar with the temperature in the room or the light in the room. You're not thinking about it. You're aware of it. So keeping about 25% of your awareness on the fact that you're breathing helps you to stay grounded in the present. Now, how you know that you're breathing must be felt in a sensory fashion. So you can feel the breath, you can feel the belly expanding or whatever it is for you. This is not a thinking exercise. This is a non-conceptual exercise. So you need to be feeling in some way, shape or form that you're breathing. And as you go throughout your day-to-day, like you're listening right now or you're presenting, whatever it is, if you can do that, it'll help you to stay grounded in the present, falling awake to the life as it's happening moment by moment.
God, that is so good and so practical and so easy for people just to integrate
simple,
it.
Not necessarily easy.
Yeah, okay.
Very, very simple, not necessarily easy.
Yeah. But I think it's just asking ourselves the question of like, how do we want to go through our lives? And I just think, why wait for crisis? Why wait for problems to arrive? You know, if you can just do this now when things are potentially, you know, okay in your life, just those small little improvements that you'll notice, but it's so powerful. And I love the analogy of the globe of like you shake it and that's how our mind is sort of day to day. It's like, you know, just firing, wiring off in all these different ways. Whereas, you know, if you can just practice those mindfulness techniques, those breathing techniques, those long out breaths and things, which is what I actually, when you were saying that, then that was the biggest help for me in my anxiety, was that I was constantly trying to take a deep breath, but I couldn't because I was just breathing into my chest. And it was that then I got anxious about being anxious, and then that spiral just kind of completely got out of control. So it was through the breathing techniques that really helped me overcome anxiety, and it really did help me in such a phenomenal way. So I highly recommend anyone that's feeling stressed right now, give these breathing techniques a go, because they worked for me, and I hope that they will work for you. I'm confident that they will. Yeah,
the relaxation response, that technique, you need to have the relaxation response in order to fall asleep. It's another name for it is the rest and digest type of breathing, but also the parasympathetic nervous system. That's what you're triggering for all those scientists out there. And the good news is that when you're lying in bed at night, you can only breathe functionally because your back, your chest can't go up mm-hmm. because it's lying in the bed, in the mattress, unless you sleep on a waterbed, which I don't know anyone who does these days. And often people, you know, you wake up wired at 3 a.m., this massive project. Oh, right. Oh, yes. And, then you find it hard to fall asleep. And if you don't fall asleep straight away, because doing this sleep, never works. No. The more you try, the more you're pushing sleep away. And then if you don't sleep, then you start catastrophizing. Oh, I've got a massive day. And then that just kind of breeds this. So to get out of it, the quickest way to get out of your head is just to come to your senses. And you will be distracted, but if you do these really exaggerated type of breaths, it really helps to shift to the sensory experience. And that's when it's nice and passive, and that's when things settle down. You trigger the relaxation response, and before you know it, and you wake up more refreshed, rejuvenated, ready to go.
Incredible. I just know this episode is going to help so many people. And I could honestly sit here and I think talk to you for another hour at least, but I'd love to have you back on as we go through this year to talk more about these practices and maybe go into even more practical steps with the audience and the people that, you know, are sort of looking to get that sort of slight edge and get control of their mind and learn some of the practices that you've spoken about today. But for those that want to find out more about yourself and your meditation or the work that you're doing, where can I send them? Where do you hang out the most? Is it LinkedIn? Have you got a website? Yeah. Where can I send people to find out more about you?
MrMeditate.com. Reach out. We're here to support workplaces in this practice. We're truly focused. We do one-on-one training as well and coaching, often with leaders or individuals. But we're out there to enhance workplace cultures and bottom lines, because that's what the CFOs want to hear. How is this good for our people as well as, you know, our bottom line? And so all sorts, facilitations. And I've recently, it's about to launch actually, it's a keynote speaking business, because I've spoken at about 50 conferences. And they've always been in streams, stream this mindfulness or meditation, stream, you know, BCD. So I've started Tom EQ, which is about equanimity, because everyone I'm finding wants or seeks balance at some point in time, whether it's money, time, health, or, you know, balancing family, work, whatever it is. This equanimity is something that everyone can really, really benefit from. And from, you know, drop-in sessions to, you know, in workshops, themed workshops like Mind Your Own Busyness being our sort of most popular one over the last 10 years, techniques to kind of help you, to running courses, to training instructors, to setting up brain break stations in offices where people can go have a brain break, so necessary. We didn't really touch on too much about the brain today, but everyone needs a brain break. And the neuroscientists are saying five-minute brain breaks a day. Start with one, right? And if you can manage one, then maybe one day do two. And a brain break can be as simple as just look staring out into the sky, no phones, no conversation, no disruptions, just giving the brain an opportunity just to go into idle, like in neutral in the car, and just to rest. So, so important.
We would definitely have you back on. There's a lot more I want to touch upon, but I am conscious of time. So Thomas, thank you so much. And I know that your workshops and the work that you're doing is just so important and will be even more important as we, you know, go through this year and go into this really rapid pace of change that this next decade is going to present. And I'm definitely going to get you back on to talk about how we can navigate that change. But thank you so much for today. And we'll definitely stay in touch.
One final comment, patiently and persistently, patiently and persistently, you are bound to be successful, bound to be successful. Thank you very much, Georgie.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.
Thank you.